Hello, and welcome to The Oscar Went To, the podcast that looks back at a year in film and sees what films endured, what films didn't, and attempts to figure out why. Please give it up for your masters of ceremony, Max Salim and Nick Mastad.
Remember at like Blockbuster?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
You
no,
had to like
did
rewind
you?
Rewind your videos, and then for some reason they sold like an ancillary piece to your VCR that would rewind them much faster.
That to me is like the same company that makes that speed rewinder also made like the deck of card shuffler, if you ever saw that, where it's like, these are completely like an unnecessary device. Did you have the speed rewinder?
No, I didn't, but I remember seeing them like for sale. And I, now that we're talking about it, I don't really understand the context in which you would need to rewind with such speed. Like you're late, you're about to have a late fee, is the idea.
And it's a race against the clock. Like we're talking literally like it's due in less
minutes.
Than a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dude.
You need need that extra minute.
Just beads of sweat dripping down your face as like the machine is just whirring. Yeah.
That's if we have any listeners that are like 20, they're going to have like absolutely no idea what we're referring to right now. I think
real quick on the speed rewinder, I do feel like that type of purchase where it's like completely unnecessary is the type of thing. Like, do you remember Game Genie? Like,
no.
Did you have, okay. Maybe I'm getting a little too off course here, but
what's Game
Genie? We never had a lot of Game Genie was just like it was like for, I think Sega and maybe for the other video game systems at the time, but it's like a cartridge all its own that you put into the machine, into the console, and then you put whatever game you're playing on top of it. And the Game Genie basically like unlocks all the codes and like kind of just like, like all the, like it just like unleashes everything. And like Game Genie and this like rewind, like speed rewinder, it's the type of product where I'm just like, whoever actually purchases these things, I'm sort of just like, I want to be like, you know, we're going to like all die one day, right? Like you can't like, I'm trying to like follow this train of thought where it's like stuff like that where it's just like, bro, like we're rewinding videos at the speed we rewind them. Like that's a really cool thing. And like video games, it's like we're playing them, bro. Like let's just play
these
the video
like,
games and try to.
These get people are after life hacks.
Yes, I mean it like to the point of like to me, it truly reads is like they're trying to like of like forget about death. So like where it's just like yo, we're all gonna die one day. Like
Game Genie though, dude,
but,
that is unbelievable. I wonder how even that technology worked. You know.
Well, I truly don't know. I think I knew like one or maybe two kids that actually had it, but everyone talked about it and being like, yeah, I'm getting a Game Genie soon. I'm getting a Game Genie soon. Like, and like no one had it. Like it was like this really like elusive sort of magic device.
Do you remember when Rumble Packs were added to the N64 controller?
Man,
and you
I
needed like four AA batteries in your Rumble Pack and snap it into
yeah.
the controller.
Dude, I haven't heard the phrase Rumble Pack. I haven't thought about that phrase in so long. That's like a little time capsule, like just like getting sprayed with like an ex-girlfriend's perfume. Like it's just like, whoa, yeah. I remember that time.
Sorry to do that too,
about.
Dude.
No, it's good. Let's get into it. This week is a supplement to our 1995 episode. We are getting our scuba gear on, as always, and doing a deep dive into the 1995 hit film Braveheart, directed by Mel Gibson. I'm Nick.
I'm Max.
On this podcast, we like to look back at a year in film and decide what has aged well and what hasn't and try to figure out why. If that sounds interesting to you, we recommend that you jump back a few episodes in our feed and check out our recap of 1995. And then after that recap, we like to jump into the depths and take a closer look at some of the films that piqued our interest from a given year. A quick disclaimer, our deep dive episodes are no holds barred, and we will absolutely be getting into spoiler territory. So if you've never seen Braveheart before and you'd like to see it, we recommend watching that movie before listening to this episode. All right, without further ado. Okay, so I'm just going to set the table just on Braveheart. So again, it won Best Picture. It was nominated for 10 Academy Awards, more than any movie in 1995. It won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, Best Makeup, and Best Sound Effects Editing. It currently It holds a 78% on Rotten Tomatoes, an 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Directed by Mel Gibson, it was written by Randall Wallace. So Max, in our 1995 episode, you had mentioned that this was a blind spot for you. You had never seen Braveheart, correct?
Yeah, I actually put it on my why was this considered good category, even though I had never seen it.
Pulled a me, that's right. So I assume you have watched it now.
I have watched it. I think I really hit the nail on the head with that, actually.
Yeah, I think so too. Not to screw the pooch, but I'm with you. So what are your initial thoughts on viewing Braveheart?
I feel a little bad because the way I usually personally discover film podcasts, I listen to a lot of different film podcasts, and the way I discover them is usually I'll watch a movie and be really, really enjoy a movie and then go seek to listen to a podcast of people who also enjoyed the movie and hear what their thoughts are on it. So I feel bad if anyone is joining us under those pretenses today, because what the fuck is this movie? This is so weird to watch, having never seen it in 95 and coming across it now.
Okay, so let's get right into it, because this is a stronger reaction than I had anticipated. So like off the bat, just kind of go off. Like what was like insane about it, or what was weird?
I don't even really know where to start. This movie, like,
yeah,
I don't mind long movies. Some of my favorite movies are really long. There's no need for this movie to be 3 hours long.
Agreed.
Absolutely
agreed.
No need. Huh. I find okay. that no okay. characters have any like sensible motivation. Everybody in the story is like a cartoon character, either good or bad. And they like have no characteristics or qualities that add any texture to their characters. It's a super melodramatic movie. Mel Gibson is probably like 20 years too old for the part, even though he's not my main issue with this movie, but just I'll throw that out there. And then I sensed that I'm not like a Scottish historian by any means. I sensed watching this movie that it must be historically inaccurate. And there seems to be a lot about that out on the internet. Like, this seems to be a point of contention for a lot of people. But I am genuinely shocked that the overwhelming response to this movie is like extremely positive.
Yeah.
Whether it is reviews, whether it is like top 10 lists. And still today, people on Letterboxd seem to genuinely enjoy this movie. It's like ranked number like 60 on the IMDb top 250.
Okay, so I will say, watching this movie, I remember it being just like absolutely beloved. Now, and then when I was like kind of like after watching the movie and doing some homework for this episode, I realized it wasn't quite as like, you know, bulletproof, all-time beloved as I thought it was. I mean, like, it's a 78 on Rotten Tomatoes, so that's like not, you know, that's not perfect. A 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd is like also like I kind of view 4 out of 5 as like kind of the mark of like a great like okay, this is like a all-time classic. 8.3 is insane on IMDb. But I guess I just like mean like basically I think the reason that this movie kind of has this kind of surprising place in great cinema is I honestly think, and I reference this in the 95 episode, and there's a bigger point here where it's like my reference point for originally watching this movie was in high school, and it was because all the cross country dudes were like, who I was like, I was in track in high school for like a year, sucked. I literally got dead last every 800. But this was like, it's basically like a really, it makes like you appreciate like something like Lord of the Rings way more. Cause it's just like, I feel like if a movie is a genre, same with Gladiator, there are like these movies that like when it's like a historical epic that's all about like, you know, like it's about our freedom and it's about life and it is about not being a coward. It's about facing the day. It like kind of like has that, just having that, like if that kind of story is done in a coherent way, there's going to be like, it's going to, I think, have a better chance of having a stronger legacy, because there is like, I think the athletes of the world are like, yes, this movie. I would say like, this is like sort of a meathead classic is what this is. and so it's like, and it's, I mean, It's like, and that's okay. what it is. Yeah. And like, and because right. like, I will say like the pockets of strong moments in the movie are all, in my opinion, that where it's like the rousing speech at the, before the, you know, the big, like long spear battle and like, you know, him in prison before being tortured, like all this, it's like those strongest moments that at least affected me the deepest, or had any real depth to them were those moments that are just like something you'd probably think before, you know, they shoot the gun for the race to start, you know?
Okay. A meathead classic. Yeah. So yeah, I will say before we really get into it, that it's not that there are zero redeeming qualities about mm-hmm. this movie mm-hmm. for me, but I was just flabbergasted watching to know that this won best picture and,
yeah.
and best director, right?
Yeah, certainly. It did. It won. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I had to just start with that. And, okay. It's sort of the opposite of what we just spoke about last week, which was Before Sunrise, mm-hmm. a movie that was pretty much went unnoticed and has since gained a really strong following. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like the anti Before Sunrise, where it's like big budget, big Hollywood, big awards, and is like, again, just baffling, in my opinion,
yeah.
through my 2021 eyes.
Totally. Before Sunrise is a spark that's grown into a huge fire. Braveheart is a huge fire that has fizzled out into smoldering embers. Yes. 100%. I'm with you 100%. I think Beautiful. Like, even before we get into like scenes and moments and stuff, I do think this speaks to like just looking at like how the nominations went and like the success that this movie had at the Academy Awards. It speaks to kind of, maybe it's a little dated, maybe this like time has passed somewhat, but at least at the time and kind of like in the history of the Oscars up until this point, it's like a big historical epic. Oscars truly love that genre. I mean, like it's got the period piece element. It's got the epic ambition to it. And it's got like, you know, it's a historical story, like all this stuff. So it's like, you got costume design, you got makeup, you got sound effects, you got, you know, like all of these, it opens up a whole genre of categories to be nominated for just by being like a historical epic. And because you have the added element of like Mel Gibson, who at the time was this sort of beloved leading man who had like a you know, he'd been in the industry for 15 some years at this point, where it's just like you have that added Hollywood narrative of like this beloved leading man. So I feel like, or at least he was beloved at the time to audiences. So like, and the industry is like kind of rooting for that narrative too, of like, okay, he's really ambitiously taking on this, like this project. Let's see if he does it. And I think like the audience and like Oscar voters were rooting for him. So there's that added element too, but it's just like, yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into some scenes and moments that maybe we liked, and then we can pick it apart. So I will say there were a couple moments in this movie that I did dig, or at least found funny, and we can pick them apart. I think the whole segment of like William Wallace coming back after, like when we first see Mel Gibson, like at, you know, we have kind of like the prologue of him being a kid. As soon as we get Mel Gibson, like, or William Wallace coming back as like an adult, like, and when he's like sort of like living his life peacefully and kind of falling in love, I did like this. I did find Mel Gibson very winsome in this sort of segment, where I'm like, this is really nice. And like, I know it's like very like cliche and like Hollywood, but it's like nice in that way, where it's like really handsome leading man that's just like the envy of all the women and men in the town. And like, he's smarter than everyone and more handsome than everyone. And like, he's falling in love and devoted to peace. Like, and you know, it's like all going to crumble the longer it goes on. I found this kind of nice and pleasant.
Yeah, I'll repeat that Mel Gibson's performance as William Wallace isn't necessarily at the top of the problems of this movie. And I do think that, yeah. like, he is he's sort of uncharacteristically charismatic mm-hmm. to the Mel Gibson we know today. And
oh, yeah.
I'll admit, I didn't, even though I slogged through this movie at 3 hours, mm-hmm. it's a feather in his cap that you don't hate him by the end of the movie. You still somehow care what is happening to him. So,
yeah.
Yeah, good on you, Mel Gibson, for it's like true leading man stuff that he pulls off yeah. here. So,
Yeah, and I will say, like, that Hollywood quality of that I just referenced is, like, kind of making me, like, realize, like, what is good about this movie is that, like, it's a historical epic in the kind of, like, traditional sense, and it's kind of like that has its place, kind of like rom-coms have their place. Like, this, like, you know, this historical epic is not necessarily my, like, cup of tea. In general, it's like an undertaking and can be a slog. Like, and this movie certainly, has its moments where it is a slog. But I do, it's not bad, not a bad thing. Like, this movie, like, is serving its genre very heavily. And I think, like, the when it's at its best, it's really doing that through the what's best about these, like, historical epic movies.
I wanted more historical something in this movie. Like, it just felt like the dialogue scenes were just filler to get us to another, like, head smashing battle. And those head smashing battles can be great when you truly understand the stakes of what is going on inside of them. But I found by the third or fourth one that it was just like, yeah, it was just fat on nothing.
I didn't have
any emotional connection to what was happening on screen, because there wasn't the stakes weren't built up through other parts of the movie.
Yeah, I think this is where, like, a defender of the movie would be like, "You're thinking too hard," but I'm totally with you, because it's like that is, like, the balance of, like, it's a double edged sword, because it's like the historical, like, Hollywood epic that, like, when you sit down in a movie theater and buy a ticket to this kind of movie, it's like that's kind of what you want. But it's like after a little while, it's like you do need stakes, you do need, like, meaning. And I do feel like that's a good point, because it does feel like it kind of, like, the stakes disappear after like the first battle, and you're kind of like, okay, like, where are we going with this?
And Gladiator can do that, and not that I think Gladiator is, like, a excellent movie, but Gladiator has that, and Lord of the Rings has that. Not that Lord of the Rings is historically accurate at all, but they do have these 30-minute battle sequences, but you compelled by them. And this is missing. And, like, yeah, I'm not, like, a big history guy, but it might be nice to finish this movie and think that you have a vague understanding of this time period in Scotland and England, which you really don't.
For sure. I'm with you in the sense of, like, purely just the stakes of the movie, because it's like kind of, you know, just reading up on this movie and looking at how much of a contention people had with the historical inaccuracy of this movie, which is vast. I did find myself being like, well, was the movie good? And I think, like, because, like, in this case, it's like, no, it feels like the movie, like, kind of suffers. And it's like, well, if it's historically inaccurate and it kind of is, like, a slog, then it's like, why don't you just make it, like, try to plug in some historical accuracy there? I mean, like, cause to me, it's like, at the end of the day, it's like, yes, this is telling like presumably, you know, actual events, or at least, you know, things that's a real figure in history. To me, it's like, after, I don't know, it's like for something to be historically accurate, if it's historically inaccurate, I don't, like, immediately on paper, I'm not like, that's bad. The movie, like, suffers, and I don't even know if, like, the historical accuracy would add stakes to it. I mean, I guess there'd be, like, an educational quality and, like, at least, like, some, like, substance to it. But, like, I don't know. To me, it's, like, a dramatic issue, not necessarily, like, the historical inaccuracy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a dramatic issue. And so I don't care if the drama is historically accurate or not, but it needs some of that going on.
For sure. I mean, like, I found it most egregious when, so Princess Isabella, when she's, like, talking with, like, her handmaiden, and they're just, like, swooning over, like, William Wallace. And
yeah, they're that getting, he's like,
it's truly like Robin Hood.
They're getting,
shit,
like, orgasmic, yes, over, like,
and yeah, then when he
about
comes,
how many people he slaughtered, like,
yes. And then, like, when he, like, meets with her privately in the tent, and her handmaiden is just, like, there and kind of, like, giving her, like, looks, like, okay, like, it's, like, truly, like, all right, like, this is, like, I know nothing about this time in history, but this is egregious. Like, this is, like, Maid Marian Robin Hood shit. Just real quickly about just kind of the courting phase that we have with William Wallace courting his wife. I just thought it was, like, almost, it was comical, and, like, and I don't think it didn't read as intentionally comical, but comical nonetheless. And it was, like, almost like a sketch in terms of how they basically just mapped, like cliche high school courting rituals onto like 11th century Scotland, like him like throwing rocks at her kind of like stick window. And he's just like kind of, he like draws her a picture and he's just kind of like giggly and all this. Like, it was really funny. Like,
yeah. And yeah. She's like, you have children? And he's like, no, but I'm hoping you can help me with that. Like, good one, William.
Jesus.
Nice one, dude.
Yeah.
Or man. in this sequence when like, he's just like casually pelting his like good friend in the face with a rock. It's like a joyous, like,
oh, we are best friends. As he has like he's bleeding out of a significant cut in his forehead from the rock that was just thrown at him. I have like two more. I want to bounce off of you. Do you have any scenes or moments that you did like or that you have listed? Because I can keep going.
Generally, the I think you might need to carry this part a little bit, but sure. Generally, all of the helicopter scenic shots of Scotland were super beautiful, and I could use more of that. And it reminded me of Legends of the Fall. Actually, it didn't remind me of Legends of the Fall, but I felt like this could have taken a note out of Legends of the Fall's book in leaning a little bit harder on the landscapes than it does, because the landscapes are powerful enough, but then they're sort of just like having a battle in like a green field. And it's like, oh, okay, maybe that's not historically accurate, but like, let's like spice up the surroundings a little bit.
That's a really good point, and I'm with you there 100%. Because the opening shots of this movie particularly, I mean, all the landscape shots, where we only really get them in like the first third of the movie. Yeah, and they are, like you said, powerful. Yeah, absolutely. I think like Lord of the Rings too, like, did that really well. And I think like if this had like more of like that sort of recognition or celebration or context of the landscape throughout the movie, I think you're totally right. That would like totally add to it. Yeah, the only other like kind of like really strong moments I thought was sort of something I've already referenced, where it's just like the first battle with like the Longstaffs and like him giving that motivational speech is like really powerful and totally works. And I think like the type of moment that a movie like this is tailored to, where it's just like the motivational speech. It's a trope of like this genre, and it's just like you know you're motivating all the soldiers before like a battle where you're way outnumbered is like. You know, and this one is pretty great. I did dig it. And that first battle with the Longstaffs is
like, did
you
get fucking amped?
I did. I actually ate a bunch of orange slices and then ran 4 miles. It was cool. It was really cool. So just like it's just similar to Gladiator and like movies of this ilk, where it's like him like in prison, you know, not every man dies, not every man really lives. Those moments are like, those were well done and powerful, even though they were Hollywood and cliche.
Yes. I just like, I also missed the point when he became like a revolutionary and he like really believed in Scotland's freedom, because he first starts going vigilante because his wife has been killed and he hates the English, it seems like. So then it was a bit strange to me, and I just like missed the point when he became like the freedom fighter that he is.
I viewed it as like the British killing his wife, or the English killing his wife, was like, that was it. It was like, that was the,
that's
it. I mean, that's how it's sold, at least.
That's true. That's pretty oppressive. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's pretty oppressive, to rape and pillage and kill people.
Yeah. I will say, and that is like,
that's enough.
The other moment in the movie that I like found really effective is when he returns on horseback to the village after his wife is not at their agreed upon meeting spot. And she's been like, it's like, it's a intense fucking sequence where it's like, she gets her throat slit. It's like, it's nasty. And him like kind of just like meandering, like sauntering on horseback, like back to the village and fucking kicking some ass, was like, I was like, yeah, this is satisfying, and here we go. Like, he is now we're off to the races here with like, he's gonna be there's gonna be a lot of bloodshed. I found it to be very effective. Okay, the tight lipness I'm seeing from you right now, I just want to communicate to the listeners.
I don't want to be redundant in this point, but it's not the violence that bothers me. I'm not a guy who's like, I can't handle violent movies. But it just is like, it's so much violence and it's so cartoony that it just becomes a completely desensitized thing. And let you care when his wife's throat is slit. But by the end of the movie, when you've seen like the millionth guy chopped in the head with an axe or something, or like arrows shot through someone's body, it's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of boring. It's sort of like when a superhero movie like goes too CGI on the bit.
This is interesting because I was going to bring up this point a little later, but let's talk about this now, because the violence in this movie is like, I got the sense that this movie was like very violent for the time it came out. The violence in this movie is very intentional. And it, like, to your point, it is like, it's just like consistent throughout. I actually didn't mind the violence. I don't necessarily mind that. And I don't know, like, because like, to me, the way I read it is like, so many battles that we've seen in movies are not violent, or they're kind of like presented in this way that's a lot of like clanging of swords and like bodies falling, but no blood or guts or any real representation of like what it might actually look like, or like the human, not even human cost, but just like what it actually looks like. And like, to me, it's like desensitizing to see it like kind of polished over in like a non-bloody way. And this movie, like, yes, it's like, it's just like a barrage of violence. And like, gore is a strong word, but just seeing like blood and like axes and heads chopping off and stab wounds going through, like all this, I kind of like liked it in the way that it was like, oh yeah, like battles, this is probably closer to like how battles were, in terms of just like, it was just sort of this, like, you know, if you're desensitized to it, yeah, like, I don't know that that's necessarily an unintentional thing on the filmmaker's part, because it's like, this was just like, you know, battle is just like hundreds and thousands of people dying like this. So it's like, I guess like we do feel it with like his wife, even though we don't see her throat slit, which I think like is maybe, it's the first, maybe the most violent act we've seen in the movie. So up until that point. And so like, you really feel that. And then like from then on, it's kind of like, okay, this is just this is just like straight up violent. And I don't know. I guess like, I kind of liked it, because it feels like it just feels like intentional, and not like in a way that's like necessarily trying to shock the audience, but it's just like representing battle in a way that like it's not typically represented. That feels like, no, it's like it is violent, and therefore we're gonna make this as violent as the rating system will allow us to. So I actually kind of
sure like I'll buy. So you're saying that me becoming desensitized to the violence is intentional, because it is so thorough and explicit in these battles that the people become also desensitized. Like, the value of a human life isn't that valuable in this time period. And so the feeling I'm feeling is accurate to what the filmmaker wants to convey.
The characters maybe we feel the strongest emotional connection to, his wife and him, the most violent acts, the acts that kill them, and very like gory acts we don't see are like out of the frame. Her getting her throat slit and him being disemboweled, like, we straight up don't see, and it's barely implied. Him being disemboweled. So it's like, good there point. there is something there too. I don't know that that's necessarily an effective way to do it, but like, that is like an artistic choice for sure.
I think this, you've made a good point, but I think we've also gotten through this conversation. Okay.
We're starting to resemble the pacing of the movie we're reviewing. Okay. So that's it for me for like scenes, moments. So let's move on.
There's like scenes and moments that I was like, thought were ridiculous. I liked when he like barged into that house on his horse and like murdered people, and then just like sort of inexplicably jumped out of that door that like leads to the river with his horse and just murdered his horse. For, it was like, why didn't you just turn around and go back out the front door?
I would also qualify that, him and on his horse jumping out of the window, I would categorize that as, we didn't know that this movie was going to be in 4K ever. Just because like it's like, I was cracking up, cause it's like very clearly just like not Mel Gibson on the horse in like a bunch of those shots, which is always great.
Are we going to talk later about when King Edward throws his son's like boy toy out of the window?
Yeah. Let's just talk about this now.
Because that's pretty outrageous.
Okay. Because it is. I mean, and because it's like the most outrageous thing is like, that like character's like body, like anytime a character gets thrown out the window, clearly like not resisting, it's clearly just like a choreographed like stunt in a movie. It's like the him just like straight up like jumping almost on his own accord and flailing his limbs is just like, all right, that's like, that's comical, man. That's like a comical physicality.
But do you have anything to say about the gay subplot in this movie? Because it was pretty bad, I thought.
I it was extremely bad. Let's go to talking points, because this falls under talking points. So, yes, this is the perfect time to talk about this, because I watched this movie with my roommate and we were talking as we were watching it. And I was like, is this homophobic? Like, what this subplot, like, it feels like they're using the prince's homosexuality as like kind of like almost in the way that they use like the British accents. And like the next talking point is that how the villainous like characters in this movie are so clearly framed, like everything, like from a production standpoint and script perspective, is like used to be like to signal to the audience like these are bad guys. So I was like kind of like with the gay subplot, I sort of like, are they using like the prince's like homosexuality as like, oh look, he's like, he is bad, like because he's gay. And I was like, I don't necessarily know that that was like the case, because I started to feel like it started to maybe show like the king's like disapproval or like dislike of the homosexuality, like was kind of used to like show that the king was like, or reinforce the king's evil. But I don't know. It didn't feel like very pure to me. Like it like felt like it kind of like walked this line and got into kind of bad territory with like especially with like the princess, where it's just like, oh yeah, she's like she's married to a gay prince, therefore like she's gonna go for it with William Wallace, and we're gonna root for William, you know? Where it's like, it's like that's a little too easy and clean.
Yeah, I guess I can't completely put my finger on it, and this is not, it just seems like the movie was either saying you're weak-minded and impotent, so therefore you're gay, or you're like weak-minded and an impotent because you're gay, sort of like the prince's qualities were too, maybe he just had too few qualities.
Yeah.
So it felt like all of these qualities were somehow connected to one another.
I would agree with you where it's just like, he's like portrayed as extremely weak and gay. And like, those are the two characteristics that like he's given. And therefore it's like, what are we doing here? As I was like thinking about it, it's like, okay, it's not like, it feels pretty egregious. Just in terms of just like, it doesn't feel like flatly homophobic, but it is like, it's very negative. Like it just like, you need to give some dimension to this character, like other than like his sexuality.
I think that's the heart of it, that it's, maybe it's not overtly homophobic, but it's not a good look, mostly because these characters are so underdeveloped.
That
it becomes like a huge part of the prince. And just like in general, like you were just saying, like these characters, the bad guys are so,
dude, let's talk about this.
They're like so like pale.
Yes.
And like, dude, scrawny and like mean.
And they all and like, talk like this. We'll get William Wallace. Yes. Oh, their one clan abandoned him. Now he's falling right into our trap. Like what hero? What hero talks like that? like it's like, that is a villainous voice.
And they're all in like dark stone settings, like
with goatees. Yes. And like
terrible haircuts.
Terrible. The haircuts, bro. The haircuts. I mean, it's truly just like mushroom cuts. And like the one guy who they like, William Wallace beheads after they like storm that one. I think it's when they take down York, like the castle in New York, and like he cuts that,
yes,
like,
yes, that dude, full of pumpkin pie haircutted freaks.
Dude, pumpkin pie haircutted freaks. And that particular, like the, like whoever the leader of that York is, who they behead, like when you see him, it's like, Jesus Christ. Like his, like he looks like, this is mean, but he just like, it, I feel like from a casting perspective, this is intentional, where it's like, he looks like a goddamn Halloween mask. Like he's just like, his eyes are just like bugging out of his head. And he's like, William Wallace is here. It really is. I remember. So here's a point that I kind of wanted to bring up.
They look sorry. Let me just jump in and say they look sort of like Robin Hood men in tights.
Absolutely.
Like,
this is the Robin Hood, like, parallels here are deep and consistent.
But almost comedically.
Yes.
They're almost like comedic.
Yes.
In their evilness.
But okay, and it's just like, and it's like, but it's like how this is like manufactured, where it's like, it's like you don't like these people because of like, because they talk like this and they're a bit weaselly. And it's like all these factors of like their haircuts and their voices and their mannerisms, like all this stuff that's like built up to be like, okay, these are the villains. And then our heroes are like, all right, now I'm fighting pure. Like all this stuff is like, it's just interesting. Like I like, cause it's just like, that's all extremely manufactured. And I guess it can be summed up into like the lack of dimensionality to any of the villains of this movie. This like bad guy, like Edward the First, Longshanks, is just like, yeah, this dude's like horrible, like with no redeeming qualities. He's just bad, which is like, I guess like that's a type of movie, but it just like felt like, can we like, for a Best Picture winner, a supposed classic movie, it's like, what? I don't know. It just, I don't know. It's like that in itself, yes, dude, in and of itself is not bad, but it just feels like it's part of why this movie, watching it, was just like lacking like any sort of oomph or relevancy. Yeah, we can, we don't have to include this in the podcast, but what it reminded me of is I remember you voicing a contention that you had with a choice Spielberg made in Schindler's List with making the, giving the Germans, all the Nazis talked in German, where all the while the Jewish people talked in English.
Yeah.
Yeah. This like kind of reminded
that part of Schindler's List.
Yes. Where it's just like, where it's like, this reminded me of that, where it's like an artistic choice to like, kind of like just sway the audience of like, do we need to be told that the Nazis are bad? Like the Nazis are pretty bad. Like, why are we, where this like same too, where it's just like, okay, like this dude, you know, the British are like, or the English are like invoking a law, which this goes into the historical inaccuracy pretty solidly, I found out. Where he's invoking this law of like the nobles can like take the virginity of like the serfs' maiden daughters on their wedding nights. Like, it's like that in and of itself is pretty bad. Like, do we need them talking like this as well? Like, I don't know. Like, it feels like it's just like spoon feeding a little too much. Again, yes. Meathead classic. All right. So let's get in. Do you have any more talking points?
Oh, yeah. What is up with the emperor's? What disease did the emperor have?
Bro, I was going to put this
Get some Clearasil, bro.
Dude,
Jesus Christ.
I put this in under the category of this is why we can't have nice things, is this character. Because it's like, I didn't.
All right, let's just do the category.
Yeah, man. It's this fucking like walking zit of a character. It's like just really off-putting. And like, it's like, I don't want to see this. And also I didn't think about it all that hard, but it's like, what's this character's purpose? He's like, he's kind of like supposed to like be seducing this like leader. Like I don't know. Like, it was just gross. And because we like almost comically, like he just looks grosser and grosser every time we return to him. It's like, Jesus Christ. Like, please.
I know, it's darker and darker too in his like abode.
Yeah, whatever that place is, it's like he's like, I assuming like quarantine in like a castle somewhere. I don't know, man. That's nasty. I assumed it was like, I don't know, syphilis? I don't know what it was. He needed a medieval, yeah. Where's a band-aid when you need one? I don't know. What do you got? Anything for this is why we can't have nice things besides the entire movie?
Yeah, I guess I didn't really think about this category because I felt like I had so much stuff going on.
I think a very great and bold move to be like, yeah, for this is why we can't have nice things, I am nominating the entire movie that is Braveheart. Like, I think that's fair and in play.
Okay,
cool. MVP, who you got?
MVP, I am going to go with the assistant director, who I don't know what his name is.
Oh.
But the assistant director is almost surely responsible for setting up a lot of complex scenes in this movie, especially with Mel Gibson starring in it.
Mm.
And I think that just as someone who spent some time on set, to imagine the clusterfuck it is designing these battle scenes with thousands of extras who have to go to makeup, who have to go to wardrobe, who have to get in the right spot, who have to have their props, that it all sort of somewhere, the shit all rolls down to the assistant director. So God bless you, assistant director. You surely did a great job in this movie. And I will even dig deep into the credits to figure out what your name is.
I know, I was just looking this up. Oh, they had a bunch of assistant directors. They had like 5 second assistant directors. They had third assistant director, second unit. But yes, Kieran Phipps.
Who's the first assistant director? Kieran Phipps?
There's a couple. David Tomlin is listed as first assistant director, as is Kieran Phipps.
All right. Shout out to both of you.
Yeah.
That's MVP of the Oscar-winning film Braveheart.
Yeah.
For me.
Dude, that's a really nice unsung hero. That's a good one. I had Mel Gibson just because he is arguably the movie where it's director, actor. And I, for all the film's faults, like he's, you know, there's also like, I really liked some of the choices in the movie, particularly the violence as it's mentioned. So, and again, like he's not, his acting is not the worst part of the movie by any means. He's definitely playing the like Hollywood, classic Hollywood leading man here. And I think he does a decent job. So, yeah.
I don't like this movie, but I think it's hard to say that Mel Gibson is not talented after watching this.
Yeah.
You know, both as an actor, as a director, this is a very big undertaking, which doesn't really land for me, but nonetheless, I appreciate the ambition of this film. Pop quiz hotshot.
Ooh.
Is this the most egregious Best Picture winner that you've ever seen?
No. Confident, hard no.
I haven't seen every Best Picture winner, and I think it probably does get a lot more murky as you get further back in time.
Right.
But I think I can say, like, from 1990 to 2010, that this is the most egregious Best Picture winner, in my opinion.
Crash?
Dude, I mean, Crash, yeah, is, like, not good. Green Book is not good, but this is, like, I mean, I was really baffled.
Okay.
As a meter, I never talk during movies. I get very irritated when people talk during movies. I never look at my phone during movies. I'm pretty serious about this.
Uh-huh.
And this movie, I couldn't help but be remarking with Arena like the whole time. I was so, I had to watch this in two chunks. I watched the first hour on Sunday and I was just like, I can't watch 3 hours of this right now. So I really, really didn't like this movie. And if this was a cult classic, I could swallow it a little bit more. A meathead classic, like you said.
Yeah.
Like, I think I could get more into this. And we end up talking about this in some respect pretty much every deep dive we do. Either a movie is not well awarded and we like it more because of that, or it is well awarded and we think it's unjustified. So I know we're a bit of a broken record on this, but it's just like, yeah, in a different world that this was some obscure big swing in 1995, I think I could like find more to like about it, but that this is the Best Picture of the year is brutal.
That's fair. That's a good point. Yes. I think like when you do kind of like sum it all up like that, it is like pretty egregious. I don't know that this is like the most egregious, but like the especially like considering like the movies that we listed and really like thought about for the 95 episode and that came out this year and that Endure, this is one of the best examples, I think, of the type of movie that Oscars go to or go for. And this movie like checks all those boxes where it's like, if they held the ceremony like 5 years after the Oscars, if they held like a year in film, if the Oscars for a year were doing 5 years, you know, after that given year and just given like, they were just like, had like some time to actually like see how those movies, like once the dust has settled, how that year.
Essentially the concept of our show. Yep.
Yes. It's like, this movie does not win. And I don't think it has nearly the amount of nominations. I think it maybe wins a couple of the, like maybe makeup, maybe production design, but I think like a lot of the nominations probably look pretty significantly different as well. But this is like, in terms of movies that like Oscar, if done well, somewhat with some like some competency, historical epic is like maybe aside from like a musical, a big budget musical. I feel like this is like maybe the biggest bang for the buck in terms of like Oscar chances in a given year.
I mean, there's surely going to be like people who, well, if we may be, I can imagine us losing some listeners with this take.
Have them, they should email
like
us.
If there's the
yeah, Oscar
email
went
us
to,
if you feel this way, but I'm sure.
The Oscar went to @gmail.com. Bring it.
I'm sure there's going to be some people who are like, these fucking pussies like loved Before Sunrise and they hate Braveheart. Like,
meatheads. Yes. Meatheads. The meatheads are gonna, there's gonna be a meathead mob with torches and pitchforks outside our residences. I don't care, bring it.
We're gonna get bring it, dude. Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. They're going to be like, they're going to be all like juiced up.
I'm
going to
have my
like
extra long jousts or whatever, my extra long steaks and fuck you up.
Yeah, bro. Dude, the message of this movie, the theme of this movie is wits over brawn. And so it's like, fuck it. I don't care. Like, yeah, you probably could beat me up. I don't care. Like, this movie isn't very good. Like, it gave you some quotes for you. It gave you some quotes for like your wrestling t-shirts. That's it. Like, just like fucking have your DVD and Blu-ray and fucking wear it out. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, fucking have your your three tape VHS, yeah, and then rewind that shit super fast with your speed rewinding thing so you can watch this shit over and over again on loop.
Yeah,
fucking like, losers.
Yeah, they're just trying to lose sight of that, like, high school was their heyday and they're never going to get that back.
It's also funny that like I don't think of like track as like the coolest.
No,
like jocks.
No, runners.
So it's funny that the track guys were the ones who gravitated towards this.
So I will say, this is based on my experience. Track was the only high school sport that I went out for, and I only went out for it my freshman year. So that's the only sport that I had any sort of like inside experience with. This, I have no doubt that Braveheart was huge for every sport in the school: wrestling, hockey, football, basketball. Maybe, I don't know, because of the field aspect of this, I feel like all the field outdoor sports really went for this one. Basketball, I'm not so sure. Here's what it is. But runners in particularly are like a specific set of like high school athlete, where it's like about endurance and kind of like about, like, it's like running. And now I think we're really going to lose some listeners or evoke some emails, where it's just like runners are just like, you know, all the other sports also run, but they're running to be in shape for the sport. Whereas like runners are just like doing it for the pain. Like, it's like, what's the goal? It's like, that's enviable in its own way, but it's also a very specific genre of athlete, where it's like, no, I run. And it's like, well, football players also run, but they also play football. Like, running is like one of the only sports where it's like the exercise is the sport, where it's almost just like, yeah, I do pushups.
The conditioning is the sport.
Is the sport. So I mean, like I said, this is just my kind of soapbox stream of conscience about my experience in high school running. But I do think Braveheart is appreciated by just the jocks.
All right. Well, I played team sports and I considered myself a jock, I guess. And I didn't have any hoodies made with any Braveheart quotes, Braveheart quotes on the back of them. So just to stand up for some of out there.
Can I ask did you have like themed shirts for a given year? Like, did you have like, you know, baseball?
No, but get, you know, I think 2000, I didn't have any like movie themes connected to the baseball team, but I do remember we graduated in 2005, which was the year of the Rooster, and Gabe's like made senior shirts and like sold them to people that just had a picture of a rooster on it and said, respect the cock. Love it.
Oh man, I miss Gabe's. God, that's perfect. Yes, but that is it. Like in my school, yes, maybe we're getting into something that's like different from like sport to sport within like high school. But it's like,
it's you suburban dorks out there
probably
who are really into Braveheart.
The wrestling team, I remember, had a shirt being, I am a wrestler, I am a bulldog, I am a warrior, and it's like this list of shit, and it's like, okay, bud. And do you remember, like, did you have it where it was like every like team member of whatever the sport was would have like a nickname on their back of like their hoodie or their shirt? And it was like often like there's maybe two people that organically had actual nicknames. The rest were like manufactured, where it's like, my name is like, you know, Mestaddy. And it's just like, no, you're not. Like, you can just, it's like, you don't have a nickname, so you shouldn't put a name on there.
Fucking dorks.
I know, I don't mean to come across as like, I don't think jocks are bad. I'm just like kind of going off about like the culture around it in my school, I guess, and my perception of it, like, I guess as a universal experience. There's nothing I like more, and we've connected about this, where there's nothing, it feels like a nice way. I really like the aspiration of being like an intellectual athletic type, like, or an artistic athletic type.
I know I'm like walking a fine line here because I feel the need to trash Braveheart with you, but also stand up for the meatheads that you're coming after.
This is so good. This is good. This is the
I'm walking a tightrope here.
Yeah, no, this is good. I feel like now it's recontextualized this episode as like I've been steamrolling with my like anti-meathead rhetoric, and only to find out that I was like, why is Max not jumping on this really funny bandwagon with me? And lo and behold, okay. Athletes are humans too, I guess. Fine. Cool. Anything else before we wrap up?
Get us out of here.
All right. Fasten your seatbelts. We're coming in for a landing. All right. Thank you so much for listening. As always, if you haven't already and you liked this episode or any of the previous episodes, please hit the subscribe button on your podcast player. And if you have a moment and enjoyed this show, it would mean so much to us if you left us a good review. We'd love to hear from you, as whether it be you're an athlete who loves movies and feel like we've stepped on your toes, or if you just particularly love this episode and thought we made some really great, inarguable points, contact us via email at theoscarwent2@gmail.com. And if we think you're onto something or raise a good counterpoint, we'll play it on.
You can.
Please disagree.
You can also tell us why. Why Braveheart is nails and explain why. We'd love to hear the side of the argument.
Genuinely, I mean, truly, yes. We're kind of playing up the unforgivableness of Braveheart, and in truth, we would love to hear you disagree. Okay, also, if you have a film you'd like us to talk about that's from 1995, shoot us an email and tell us why you love or hate that film from 1995, and we'll consider it for an upcoming deep dive. Max, a genuine pleasure as always. This one was particularly fun to kind of get nasty with the movie. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye, Nick.